I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is the most prominent Reform Jew in American politics, Rabbi David Saperstein, the director of the Religious Action Center in Washington, D.C., the principal lobbying arm of the Reform movement in North America. We'll also have visits from our two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbert. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom and happy Thanksgiving weekend. Most of you probably think Thanksgiving is an inherently American holiday, like baseball, hot dogs, and apple pie. In a sense, that's true, because none of them are really American in origin. Baseball is borrowed from the British game of rounders, a kid's version of the more sophisticated game of cricket. Apple pies go back to England, too, and were imported to America, along with apples, into a continent that grew only crab apples originally. And hot dogs, of course, are German sausages from Frankfurt. You know, Frankfurters, or maybe Vienna, brought to America to become our first great fast food. So while I hate to continue to ruin American popular mythology, Thanksgiving, the most American of all holidays, is also thoroughly borrowed. In fact, when the Pilgrim Fathers landed in America, they were already thinking about establishing a Thanksgiving festival like the one they knew about in the Bible, the Feast of Tabernacles, or what we Jews call Sukkot, a harvest festival of thanksgiving for God's gift of sufficient food to eat to make it through the coming winter. William Bradford, the governor of Plymouth Colony, actually studied Hebrew with a rabbi in Leiden, Holland, where the pilgrims had sojourned on their way to America. So Thanksgiving is actually a very Jewish festival. Look, what else can you call a day when you invite all your relatives over and eat way too much? Must be Jewish. Enjoy your Thanksgiving leftovers then, but do remember the food we are blessed with comes from the one source in particular, from God. And the reason we are able to enjoy it is that this amazing natural world God created makes it possible for us to live and flourish, and therefore give thanks. Well, it's also Rosh Chodesh Kislev today, the beginning of the Jewish month of Kislev, which means Hanukkah can't be very far behind, and it isn't, beginning as it always does on the 25th day of Kislev that falls on December 20th this year. To get us in the mood for the great Festival of Lights, I know it's early, but our pre-Hanukkah celebration at my own Temple Emmanuel is actually coming up in 2 weeks, Sunday, December 11th this year, the greatest Hanukkah on Earth 13. So we need to get ready. Here's a new favorite cut from Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert called Can I Interest You in Hanukkah? As the Jewish TV show host tries to convince his very Christian TV show host friend to switch holidays.
Can I interest you in Hanukkah? Maybe something in a festival of lights. It's a sensible alternative to Christmas. And it lasts for 7. For you? 8.
Hanukkah, huh? I've never really thought about it.
Well, you could do worse.
Is it merry?
It's kind of merry.
Is it cheery?
I've got some cheer.
Is it jolly?
Look, I wouldn't know from jolly. But it's not my least unfavorite time of year.
When's it start?
On the 25th.
Of December?
Kislev.
Which is when exactly?
I will check.
Are there presents?
Yes, indeed, 8 days of presents. Which means one nice one, then a week of dread.
Does Hanukkah commemorate events profound and holy? A king who came to save the world?
No. Oil that burned quite slowly.
Well, it sounds fantastic.
There's more. We have latkes.
What are they?
Potatoes. dreidels.
What are they?
Wooden tops. We have candles.
What are they?
They are candles!
And when we light them, oh, the fun, it never stops.
What do you say, Stephen? You want to give Hanukkah a try?
I'm trying to see me as a Jew. I'm trying even harder. But I believe in Jesus Christ. So it's a real non-starter.
I can't interest you, Monica. Just a little bit.
No thanks, I'll pass. I'll keep Jesus, you keep your potato pancakes. But I hope that you enjoy them on behalf of all the goyim.
Be sure to tell the pontiff. My people say good yontif.
That's exactly what I'll do. Happy holidays, you too.
That was a kickoff to our pre-Hanukkah musical previewing from Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert in honor of today's celebration of Rosh Chodesh Kislev, beginning of the month in which Hanukkah begins. Just 24 more shopping days until Hanukkah now, folks. By the way, that's the only Hanukkah song I know of that actually tells you what the Hebrew date of the holiday is. And it comes from a rather assimilated source. Very interesting and funny. Our guest this morning is a good friend, Rabbi David Saperstein, the director of the Religious Action Center in Washington, D.C., a man who knows the ins and outs of the White House and Capitol Hill from successful lobbying on behalf of the Reform Movement there for many years. Find out what he does, how he does it, and what the hot issues are now when we come back in a few moments on Too Jewish.
Long ago in the land of Tucson lived a family that really loved pizza. One year, the family's youngest daughter announced, "All I want for Christmas is a mama's pizza." When the big day finally arrived, the young girl rushed to a stocking. Inside was a mama's family-sized pizza. Well, actually, it was only partly inside, because you see, the family-sized pizza is so huge, it tore the stocking almost in half. Cheese and toppings were everywhere. Delicious red sauce painted a reindeer-shaped pattern on the rug. Innocently, the daughter declared, "Oh boy, this is great. But next year, do you think Santa could bring me a mama's gift card?" The family laughed heartily and snacked on mama's pizza as they opened the rest of their gifts. I'm Joe Spina, reminding you that a mama's gift card is perfect for the holidays. It's always appreciated and never messy. Mama's Pizza with four convenient locations. Check them out at mamasfamous.com. Now repeat after me. Mama's Pizza.
Ready to move your child to an outstanding private school? Tucson Hebrew Academy, THA, is accepting a limited number of enrollments for January 2012, mid-year. THA's kindergarten through 8th grade integrated curriculum centers on rigorous academics infused with Jewish values and ethics, thereby providing a well-rounded educational experience. While many schools have cut the all-important arts, physical education, and health classes even, THA is integrating them into the curriculum in a safe, nurturing environment. THA graduates capable, confident students poised for the next chapter in their lives, prepared to enter high school, ready to contribute to the larger community. Tucson Hebrew Academy is an award-winning Blue Ribbon school. Last year, THA awarded over $700,000 in financial assistance to students and their families. A great education is more affordable than you think, and the best education comes from THA. Space is limited. Call 529-3888 today to register or arrange a private tour. That's 529-3888 or visit www.thaaz.org. We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish our guest this morning, an old friend, Rabbi David Saperstein, maybe not so old, head of the Religious Action Center in Washington, D.C. Good morning, David.
Pleasure to be with you.
All right, so let's have the big ticket item. What's the most important issue for Jews today and your work at the RAC?
There are a number of choices that one can take. The extraordinary threats to Israel in terms of Iran's nuclear capability, the economic crisis that touches every aspect of our work as a Jewish community, our synagogues, our federations, our institutional life, as well as so many in our community have been adversely affected by it. The obvious challenge of ensuring Jewish continuity. We face some serious challenges today with some interesting creative potential solutions, but having the political courage and the willingness to work together to get there, that's really the challenge.
So there's a phrase I can't stand because I hear it all the time in these economic times, as though that sort of means that at this point, you know, we should step back from everything we believe in and just try to make sure that we can put food on the table. Well, that's true for plenty of people. Do you perceive it that way?
I don't think either for the Jewish community or for our country. I think investing in the future, in our schools, in our kids, in preparing people to deal with the changing world and new technologies, all of this is absolutely vital to the economic well-being of America and to the well-being of the Jewish community. What we intuitively do in the Jewish community, which is at times of trouble, step up to the plate and expand our giving to federations and our time giving in synagogues to meet the challenges of the moment, that's what we need to do with our country as well.
There's a very interesting thing going on, the Occupy Wall Street movement. I'm not really sure what I think about that. What do you think about it?
Well, we as a Reform Jewish movement have encouraged our synagogues to kind of walk a tightrope with it. In other words, we admire the kind of social justice idealism that animates most of the people who are involved, and many of our synagogues help build sukkahs during Sukkot, invited people to services, help lead services there, have brought food down to them, been teaching classes on Jewish perspectives on the issues that they're dealing with. On the other hand, we haven't wanted to endorse the phenomenon because it's so diffuse and so unspecific in terms of what it's asking for. And in its diversity, contains some very small minority of people who are anti-Israel, even anti-Semitic in uncomfortable ways for us. So what I do think is if you compare this with the other two great phenomena, the Arab Spring and then the protests in Israel, some very interesting contrasts. The Arab Spring sought to change governments. Neither the protests in Israel or Occupy Wall Street are intending to do that, but to change the system to make things better, but within the democratic system of the countries of which they're a part. In Israel, the protests about inadequate housing and how expensive housing was, even for the middle class, of the cutbacks that have really undercut Israel's once vaunted healthcare system and educational system, and the demand that more money be invested into the social fabric of Israel, first dealt with numbers that dwarf anything that we've seen here. If you extrapolate, I mean, if you look at the hundreds of thousands turned out at some of the mass demonstrations over the last few months in Israel, it would be the equivalent to tens of millions of people in the United States. And they were far more specific than Occupy Wall Street was. What Occupy Wall Street is more similar to in some ways is actually like the prophets of the Bible. That is, the prophets of the Bible didn't say, I have a 10-year economic plan to how to reduce the deficit and deal with banks giving loans. They said, you're not meeting the needs of the poor, and you're leaving the hungry without food, and you have an obligation to care for the widow and the orphan. We're not going to tell you how to do it. It's up to you to do it. We're just being the moral goad to say there's something wrong. And in that sense, all three of these phenomena have that prophetic idealism to them of being a moral goad to the countries in which they're a part.
We will talk much more with Rabbi David Saperstein, the Religious Action Center, when we come back in a few minutes on Too Jewish.
If your parents or loved ones are in need of advanced assisted living care, then you should know about Handmakers Tynan Neighborhood. It's the only program of its type in Tucson, and is designed for seniors whose needs have exceeded the care available from other assisted living programs. Dorothy Ho is a resident at Handmaker, and she's very pleased with her living arrangements.
My apartment is very comfortable. It's kind of like home now. And everybody here is very pleasant, too.
Dorothy's daughter Gretchen's experience speaks volumes about Handmaker's approach to family and loved ones.
When she first came to Handmaker, I can honestly say that I felt as loved and cared for as my mother has stated said recently that she feels she is loved and cared for here.
Handmaker is centrally located on Rosemont, just south of Grant, and includes 1 and 2 bedroom suites, cozy studios with patios and balconies, along with a wonderfully caring staff.
I don't even consider them staff, they're friends.
Phone Handmaker today for your tour and consultation, 322-7035, or visit handmaker.org.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetcherkvel, please email us at toojewishradio@yahoo.com. That's T-O-O, Jewish Radio at Yahoo. We check it religiously. Or visit our website at toojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website by streaming them or downloading them from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. The Temple Emmanuel Pilgrimage Trip to Israel with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, is set for May 30th to June 12th of 2012. If you're interested in going with me on this great journey to Israel, email tojewishradio@yahoo.com or call 520-327-4501 for more information and an itinerary. We welcome our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbart, head of the Israel Center. Boker Tov, Guy. Good morning.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
The UN finally agreed that Iran is a problem in terms of its developing nuclear program. Big shock to everyone, huh?
Yeah, surprise, surprise.
Only been 10, 12, 14 years Israel's been talking about it, and America's been talking about it. What does this mean?
Well, first of all, I must say that it was by far more. I remember when I was in high school, I was, I think, 17 or 18 years old at that time. It was about 20 years ago. And Shimon Peres, then a younger, well, he wasn't young even then, but a younger politician came to speak with us. And the first thing he said was the Iranian threat. And as students, we didn't understand what he's talking about. Who was, at that time, who referred to Iran as a threat? And he talked about the nuclear threat from Iran. So 20 years ago, people knew that Iran is working to achieve nuclear capabilities. Now, I think people need to understand that that's probably the most important element. Iran is not only or not mainly a threat on Israel. Iran is a threat on the Western world and on the United States. Because for ages, Iran education was referring to America as the big devil. That's what they preach in schools. That's what they teach their people. America is the big devil. And once Iran will have nuclear capabilities, taking into account those tentacles that Iran has into the world of terrorism.
Hamas, Hezbollah,
the Muslim Brotherhood, other organizations that Iran have ties with, and also other finance operations that Iran have and connections to some countries in South America that people don't speak about too much. Venezuela, for one. Those ties are very, very concerning. And, when I look at the border here with Mexico, for instance, and how easy it is to cross the border illegally and to smuggle stuff in and out, I think that's a big question. That's a question that America needs to ask, regardless of Israel.
It's an excellent question. And, we're talking about world challenges. The Iranian missiles could reach Greece, Turkey, pretty much anywhere in the region, and maybe even further.
The Iranian missiles, the Shihab 3, can reach probably any point in Europe today.
Wow.
And again, it's not that complicated to send something over to South America, to bring it closer.
To bring it up to America.
To bring it up to America, and then that could be a real threat. All the time we are protecting ourselves from attacks, terrorist attacks that happened in the past. But every time a new terrorist attack happens, they surprise us with something new. That we won't have, I hope, another 9/11. If we'll have a major attack, it will be something different. And I would guess that Iran will have a central play in that future attack. I hope not, but that would be my pessimistic guess.
Spoken like someone who's had some intelligence experience. Thanks, Guy. We will talk next week.
Thank you.
When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week. We visit weekly with the outstanding restaurateur, Janos Wilder of Janos Restaurant, the J Bar in Downtown Kitchen and Cocktails. Good morning, Janos.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Janos Restaurant's finest restaurant around. What's cooking there for the holidays?
I'm so excited about the holidays. Fantastic food. Place looks beautiful. All the private dining rooms. Rabbi, I'll even come and cater at your house.
Sounds fantastic. How about Saturday night?
Perfect.
You can do Hanukkah for us soon. New Year's. I've got Christian friends. You can do Christmas. You've got wonderful private rooms at Janos.
We want to make the holidays easy for you. We have the private rooms. We'll cook at your house. You can buy gift certificates as gifts for your friends. We want you to have a wonderful holiday season. We want it to be delicious. And we want to take the worry out of it for you.
As only Janos can. That's JANOS.com. What's the phone number to call?
615-6100.
See you for the holidays at Janos.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom. Hope you had a good Thanksgiving.
Good morning, Rabbi. I did, and I hope yours was enjoyable also.
Indeed. I always think Thanksgiving is a Jewish holiday because you sit around with your family and you eat too much. How could that not be Jewish?
Right.
We've been talking about tolerance the last couple of weeks, and we talked about tolerance education a little bit, countries that do a good job of it. You know, there's a museum in my hometown, the Museum of Tolerance, Wiesenthal Center in Los Angeles on Pico Boulevard. It's a terrific little museum, not so little. There aren't museums of tolerance everywhere there, though, are there?
No, there are very few. And actually, I've heard great things about that museum. I've never had a chance to visit. Can you tell me a little bit about it?
Yeah, you know, the Wiesenthal Center was founded in by Simon Wiesenthal and then those that took up his mantle. He's the famed Nazi hunter who, you know, was known for bringing hidden Nazis to justice over a long career. And it was originally created in some ways as a kind of a Holocaust museum, and then it kind of morphed in the process of developing it into something, I think, with a much larger mission, which is it highlights intolerance, but shows means of tolerance as well. So you'll see stuff about genocides in various places. There is certainly a very effective Holocaust display, and it's kind of an interactive museum. It does a lot of modern museum techniques where you are part of the display, and you more than just look at stuff on a wall.
Right.
But it really brings you into the mentality of everybody's kind of a minority. Everybody has relations that can be tinged by somebody's bias. It really tries to cultivate right. that sensibility. I think right. they bring kids through there. They bring police through there. They bring everybody who involves involved right. with the public.
That's great. I think that's important because in some ways we are all vulnerable to the intolerance of others. And we are all subject to displaying intolerance of our own, even if it's subconscious intolerance, by some group or type of person that makes us uncomfortable. We may lash out at them or not be as patient with them or whatever. So I think in some ways, even the very best people manifest intolerance at times.
Not me ever. I mean,
of course, but definitely me. I'm particularly intolerant of students who don't prepare for class. But it's funny that we're talking about this, and you mentioned the museum in L.A. because I'm now going to send I have a young friend who's kind of a rock star in his own field and a super skateboarder, and will be sitting on a pile of millions of dollars by the time he's 30. He's got a lot of energy and charisma, and he is very interested in promoting tolerance and protecting vulnerable groups. And I'm working with him right now, in fact, on helping to set up a kind of foundation or an institution that will be active internationally in the kinds of things I used to do with the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, with various international human rights organizations. And it's funny that he's from the LA area. And
where so many good things and people come from.
Right. But while still in his 20s, he's got an eye on putting a lot of money, time, and effort, and his own energy into this exact goal, which I think is so important and maybe one of the most important things we can do for the world today. Because what do all our scientific advances matter if people are still vulnerable to misery and mistreatment at the hands of others?
Absolutely. Well, you know, tolerance has been an important theme of Judaism for a long time. It's not that we're always tolerant, but it's such an important element for Jews. And I think we need to keep our eye on that as well, because it's easy for us to feel some of those same biases.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. A woman walks into the post office to buy stamps for her Hanukkah cards. She says to the clerk, "May I have 50 Hanukkah stamps, please?" "What denomination?" asks the male clerk. And the woman answers, "Oy vey, my God, has it come to this? All right, give me 6 Orthodox, 12 Conservative, and 32 Reform." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. The urge to journey out into the unknown is a major motivation in the Torah. We saw it with Abraham a few weeks ago. We find it in the lives of most of our ancestors, and we encounter it perhaps most powerfully of all in the story of this week's great Torah portion of Vayetze. At the start of the tale, Jacob leaves his family and his home, both of which happened to be in Beersheba at the time, and journeys towards Sumeria, today's Iraq. He has nothing with him at all, not even a bedroll, and is forced to lay his head on a rock to sleep. In this state of extremis, God brings him a promise in the form of a famous dream, a ladder going up to heaven with angels ascending and descending, and a pledge of family and land and ultimate safety and security. Jacob, our forefather, wakes from his dream and says pointedly, "Hey, God was in this place, and I didn't know it." You know, that's something all of us can say from time to time, isn't it? Somehow, Jacob must first leave everything familiar to allow him to find God's presence. Throughout human history, religions have been founded by individuals who left ordinary lives and places and wandered off into the wilderness, usually the desert. Abraham, Jacob, and Moses are the most obvious Jewish pioneers. Buddha, Jesus, Muhammad fit the same pattern. In order to become who we seek to be spiritually, we must begin by leaving what we know already. Of course, when we finally encounter God in the wilderness, we learn that God was back there at home, too. We just weren't yet ready to notice that. Of all the heroic figures in our people's past, Jacob is the most interesting. He's complex, clever, unreliable, resourceful, and he has a rather spectacularly complicated love life, all of which takes off in this week's Torah portion. But it's that first moment when he realizes how little he really knows that makes him most human, most like us. We too struggle to figure out just where we can find God. Well, if we are lucky and aware, we too can realize that God is in this place. Indeed, in every place. All we have to do is open our eyes and accept that fact. When we come back on Too Jewish, our guest, Rabbi David Saperstein, will explain why the lobbying he does on behalf of the Reform Movement is so important, and what strange bedfellows he finds himself with in Washington. Find out when we return on Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
Attention, Arizona taxpayers. You can help send children to our community's Jewish schools without it costing you a dime. Direct your tax dollars to JETCO, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization. State of Arizona allows taxpayers to receive dollar-for-dollar tax credit, not deduction, for payments made to recognized school tuition organizations. This allows them to provide scholarship for kids in K through 12 at qualified private schools. JETCO provides a quality Jewish education to children in need at Temple Emmanuel Kindergarten, Congregation Anshe Israel's Kindergarten, the Tucson Jewish Community Center Kindergarten, and the Tucson Hebrew Academy, THA. If you pay Arizona state taxes and make your donation today before December 31st, you'll receive 100% tax credit on your Arizona state income tax. Your contributions last year helped more than 100 children receive the financial aid they needed to get a Jewish education. Join over 750 supporters who gave up to $1,000 per couple, $500 per individual as a tax credit, and got it all back in the form of reduced or refunded state income taxes. To direct your tax dollars to Jewish education today, please call 647-8442. You can do it on your credit card, 647-8442, or visit JETCO on the web at www.jetco.org. Help give the gift of Jewish education.
We continue with our Two Jewish Update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Last week, Jordan's King Abdullah visited the West Bank for the first time in more than a decade in order to demonstrate support for the Palestinians' statehood bid in the United Nations. Abdullah met with Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas in Ramallah and urged the Palestinian leader to resume direct peace negotiations with Israel. King Abdullah last visited the West Bank in 2000 to meet with Yasser Arafat, Abbas's late predecessor. The visit comes in the context of Jordan's support for the Palestinian Authority and the Palestinian people to achieve Palestinian national rights and an independent state, a Jordanian palace official said. For the record, Jordan controlled the West Bank from 1948 to 1967 and established the Palestinian refugee camps that still exist there while refusing to allow resettlement and integration into Jordanian society. In brutally suppressing the Black September uprisings in 1970, Jordan expelled the PLO and has always had a two-pronged and rather two-faced approach to the Palestinians, who form something like 75% of the Jordanian population. Publicly support their right to their own state and privately quash any attempts of the Palestinian majority to take over Jordan itself. Meanwhile, in another part of the West Bank, listen to a woman soldier sing in a military ceremony or face a firing squad? I guess it depends on the singer. I mean, if you would have to listen to someone that sounds like Miley Cyrus, I can understand the difficulty of that choice, but what if it's just a regular old Israeli female singer in an army rock band? Well, an Orthodox rabbi from the West Bank has declared that male religious soldiers who are true to their Judaism should choose the firing squad rather than the singer. Rabbi Eliakim Levanon, rabbi of the West Bank settlement of Elon Moreh near Shechem, said that if the Israeli army continues to stand firm on insisting that all soldiers attend official events with women singing, the time will soon approach in which rabbis will have to say to soldiers, you have to leave those events even if there's a firing squad outside and you'll be shot to death. A little hyperbole, but his language indicated that Orthodox soldiers are now facing a form of religious persecution in the IDF, and that standing up to such persecution, even under the threat of death, would be a heroic act, a kind of martyrdom. Levanon also said that he would recommend anyone who asked me against joining the army.
This statement has reignited the singing wars, only in Israel, that began last summer when a group of Orthodox soldiers got up and walked out of an IDF ceremony in which a woman was singing, on the grounds that remaining would force them to violate their religious beliefs, forbidding them from hearing a female voice in song. That's the Talmudic principle, Kol Isha Erva. Their behavior got them expelled from officer candidate school and caused a public firestorm. Earlier this month, the IDF issued a statement declaring that it would neither eliminate women singers from army programs, even in front of audiences where a large percentage of the soldiers are religious, nor would it allow religious soldiers exemptions from attendance. If they chose to walk out, they would be treated as if they disobeyed any other order. In addition, a group of 19 major generals appealed to the IDF chief of staff and Defense Minister Ehud Barak, asking them to stand strong in the face of religious pressure, out of concern that women's service in the army would be damaged if they capitulate. The interesting part of all this is that the same Talmudic principle is involved in the prohibition in the Orthodox world on women cantors. The Talmud tells us the voice of a woman incites men to licentiousness. No word on the voice of a man inciting women similarly, by the way. Not even, you know, Tom Jones. Or Justin Bieber. Anyway, Rabbi Levanon made headlines back in May of 2010 when he said that women shouldn't run for public office because the first problem is giving women authority. And being a secretary even means having authority. The second problem, said Levanon, is mixing men and women. Secretary meetings are held at night, sometimes end very late. It's not proper to be in mixed company in such situations. The husband presents the family's opinion. This is the proper way to prevent a situation in which the woman votes one way and her husband votes another. Imagine the terror of that experience. The key question in the singing controversy is how many religious young people of army age actually listen to directives coming from rabbis like Levanon. There appears to be a power struggle between their authority and the authority of army brass, as Levanon indicated when he stated that he hoped there would be some wise people who will thwart this horrible move, insisting that women be permitted to sing and soldiers be required to remain seated while they do. Interestingly, the Rabbi Levanon headline in the Israeli press was accompanied by another one. According to the IDF, there's been a large jump in the number of religious girls interested in real army service. They expect 25% more draftees this year to accept that alternative. This is taking place despite the preference of ultra-Orthodox and Hester rabbis like Levanon, who have vociferously preached that religious girls should choose national service instead of serving in the military. The IDF chief of staff quickly spoke out against Rabbi Levanon's remarks. Irish bagel lovers aren't having much luck. A 13.5% value-added tax will be tacked on to the traditional Jewish favorite now for the first time. Under new plans by the government of Ireland to raise desperately needed revenue, that should sound familiar, bagels, croissants, garlic bread, and other premium baked goods are going to be hit with the tax this coming month. Consumers are likely to bear the brunt of the cost. Regular old bread is exempt from this tax in Ireland, but the Irish Revenue Service changed its determination on bagels, saying they were not sufficiently bread-like to be exempt from taxes on prepared or value-added foods. You know, bagels have been a staple of Ireland's small Jewish community since the 1800s, but they became widely popular in the country in the late 1990s. Consumer taste changed amid rapidly growing prosperity and internationalism. Since 2007 in Ireland, the prosperity has reversed dramatically. That should also sound familiar, forcing Ireland into a financial bailout that's left the government scrambling for new sources of revenue. And now it's bagels. I wonder if they have green bagels for St. Patrick's Day every day in Ireland. Would that be exempt from a new tax? Finally, a Jewish teen rapper named Mac Miller has had his first album debut at the top of the Billboard 200 chart. Blues Slide Park, the first album-length effort from Miller, a 19-year-old from Pittsburgh, sold 144,000 copies in its first week. The rapper's real name is Malcolm McCormick. He has a Jewish mom. He has a prominent Chai tattoo in Hebrew letters on his upper arm. McCormick's feat is all the more remarkable since his album is independently distributed by Rostrum Records, the only previous indie album released to debut at number one on the Billboard chart. Was back in 1995. Miller's meteoric rise is in large part due to his adroit use of social networking media like Facebook and Twitter, where he has millions of followers. Miller's most popular song is Donald Trump, and the Celebrity Apprentice host has signaled his approval of the track. Another big hit for Miller is Nike's On My Feet, a rap ode to his footwear in the tradition of Run DMC's My Adidas. Maybe he'll come up with a Hanukkah tune for us this year. And that's the news of Jews around the world. We welcome back to Two Jewish, our outstanding guest this morning, Rabbi David Saperstein of the Religious Action Center in Washington, D.C. David, not everybody knows what the Religious Action Center is. You are the, the creator, the Svengali, the heart and soul of the Religious Action Center. Tell us where it came from, what it is, what it does.
Well, there are about 30 mainline denominations and faith groups in the United States, the Catholics, the Methodists, Presbyterians, the Southern Baptist Convention, and then a whole range of Jewish organizations that have full-time representation in Washington, advocating on issues of concern to them. It's not so much that we're advocating for things for our particular interests, but on the broad moral view that our faith groups bring to the challenges that America and the world face. And the Reform Jewish movement has always had a very strong social justice component to it, and we created 50 years ago, dedicated by John Kennedy in 1961, and celebrating a 50th anniversary just a month from now, President Obama will join 5,000 Reform Jewish leaders in part of the celebration at our biennial convention of the Union for Reform Judaism. And we, for those 50 years, have been strong advocates for social justice. So it involves working with the Congress and the administration on behalf of Jewish values and Jewish interests. It involves training 3,000 high school, college, adult social justice concerned people, rabbis, lay leaders, Israeli Knesset members. I mean, we bring broad range of groups who come for seminars and conferences that we run and provide information and programmatic material for your synagogue and hundreds and hundreds of other synagogues, Reform, Conservative, Orthodox, Reconstructions, whoever wants to use our material all across the country about how they can program social justice activity in the synagogues.
So as a guy who is so closely associated with Washington, D.C., having the Reform Biennial in Washington is, you know, fantastic, isn't it?
It really is. This will be our largest biennial ever, and this is the second largest regular gathering in the Jewish community behind the AIPAC convention.
So how do you get the president to show up?
We try to work very closely with the White House, no matter who is in the White House. They know how large the Reform Jewish movement is, the largest segment of American Jewry, how prominent so many of its leaders are. So there's always interest on political leaders' parts from either party to come and participate in these kinds of events and to have the opportunity to speak to 5,000 engaged and involved leaders from across the country. But the president, I think, appreciates the strong social justice sensibilities of the Jewish community, and this is a segment of the community that is particularly concerned about it. So I think he felt very good about being part of the celebration of the social justice idealism and achievements of the Jewish community through speaking with us.
So as you've noted, you've worked with all kinds of administrations, many over your years. I remember you had a particularly close relationship with the Clinton administration and with Hillary Clinton. Then there was the George W. Bush administration. Tell us what it's like to work with an administration that doesn't necessarily seem to share the same ideals and views that the Religious Action Center advocates.
Look, first, if you look back over the last century at the things that the Jewish community fought for, whether we're talking about the labor movement, the civil rights movement, the Great Society programs, the Soviet Jewry movement, the pro-Israel movement, the environmental movement, every single thing that we achieved happened because of a bipartisan consensus on Capitol Hill. One of the alarming things about this moment is that bipartisan willingness to work together seems to be weakening. Part of it is the fragmentation of a sense that by working together, you will benefit politically because you can get things done you couldn't do alone. And there's kind of the sense that if you stop the other side today, that will benefit you. And if you can show they can't get it done, that will benefit you. And both sides have this kind of mentality. That's an alarming development in American politics at a time we face such crucial challenges. But we've always prided ourselves in working across the aisle. So I used to chuckle that although I had been personally friendly with both of the Clintons prior to their coming to Washington and maintained that friendship over the time they were in Washington, I was actually in the White House with the president more in the first term of the Bush administration than on business, not on social things, but on business, than I had been in the first term of the Clinton administration. We had created some strange bedfellow coalitions with religious, or the so-called religious right groups in this country to get things done. We couldn't have gotten done without them. So together we wrote and passed the International Religious Freedom Act that fought against religious persecution and discrimination across the globe. In the Religious Action Center offices, we wrote the Sudan Peace Act. It helped create the process that led to the peace agreement in the south of Sudan. The sex trafficking bill that got expanded through our efforts to be human trafficking, so sweatshops would be included as well, and the creation of the State Department office on that. Here, the debt pushed on the prison rape bill. I remember being in the Oval Office for the signing of the bill, 11 of us, Orrin Hatch and Ted Kennedy and Chuck Colson and myself. I mean, it was really...
Those are strange bedfellows.
They really are. But, you know, together we really accomplished things that made a profound difference in life better for millions of people across the globe and in the United States. So we'll work with anyone. And on Darfur, the president met several times with President Bush over that. He really cared deeply about that and believed that he would be measured in part by what he did to stop the genocidal activity there. And, you know, together we made some real progress on that.
What are some of the biggest disappointments of your career? It's a hard question, I'm sorry.
It's a challenging question and a fascinating question. I would have hoped by this point, I've been doing this now for 35 years, and I would have hoped that I would have seen bipartisan cooperation have increased, particularly at this time of crisis. Instead, it seems to be breaking down. That's a major disappointment. I think many of us believe that after 1993 and the signing of the peace agreement at the White House, the Oslo Accords, that we would have peace in the Middle East now. And I truly continue to believe that Israel's destiny, its security, its survival, its well-being depend on some kind of peace agreement with the surrounding countries, who will only get stronger as time goes on and more dangerous if the instability of the current situation remains. That's a major disappointment for us. I think we have invested a lot of time and effort in a leadership role in the religious community on environmental issues. And the failure of this country and the globe to some extent, but particularly the United States, to really come to grips with the challenges of global warming is a major disappointment. If, you know, it's interesting to see the wall to wall from the religious right over now on the global warming issue, this sense that we're called to protect God's creation, that the earth is the eternals and the fullness thereof. And it's our responsibility to protect God's creation that's been entrusted to us. And there's a sense that we're just failing on that level. Really would have hoped by this point to have made a much bigger dent in poverty in this richest country in the history of the world. And we're going backwards right now with more children in poverty, more women in poverty than we've had. Where we've done well is with older people who still remain below the overall poverty lines because of Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid, but now we're in danger of significantly curtailing those programs as well. So I had hoped we would just be in better shape and leaving the kind of world for our children that we all dream about leaving, one that is has more economic opportunity and more has lifted up the poor all across the board and all the children of America. And we're making progress in many areas in the United States and across the globe in wiping out diseases and helping certain areas of the world economically develop. But we've just got to do better because technology means if we make the same mistakes we've made in the past, the consequences today can truly be devastating in a way that they haven't been in the past. The population growth, the evisceration of the environmental environmental integrity of
the whole planet, actually, at this point.
That's right. We got to deal with these problems and have the courage to deal with it and hopefully the political leadership to deal with it.
Letakeno lomba malchut shaddai.
Indeed.
Quick word at the end. We talked earlier briefly about the Israel protest movement. Is there something we can learn from that in the United States?
Well, first is the mass numbers that are involved, as I indicated before. I mean, it really is something extraordinary. And it's very hopeful about Israel because the demographic profile of the people who were actively involved in leaders of this did not come from the organized segments of the social justice community. They were integrated into it, but the initiative and much leadership happened from people who hadn't been involved before, from middle class and lower middle class people, educated people, a younger generation, a younger cohort who had been kind of giving up on engagement in Israel political parties and other things because there was a growing kind of cynicism. And this was a source of great alarm and concern. And out of nowhere, without warning, comes this extraordinary manifestation of idealism and talk about tzedek chevrati, social justice, a phrase that is not used in Israel the way that it is used so commonly here in the United States. But that became kind of the battle cry of these folks who wanted to reshape Israel for the better. And it pushed and Bibi Netanyahu, to his credit, moved immediately to set up this task force to make recommendations. Here, the group set up their own task force, whose recommendations are coming in now. It'll be interesting to see which political party is able to capture that idealism, that commitment, that engagement to their benefit. We're seeing significant shifts in the political configurations of the parties in Israel, and everyone's trying to figure out how to grab hold of this and to incorporate that passion in the political energy and policies that the party is espousing. No one has been able to do it yet, and the enormous gravitas politically of this huge presence of people who want to make things better, that will be the central challenge for the parties in Israel. And I hope one or more of them really does it right, because Israel can use that infusion of idealism and passion and engagement right now.
Terrific. I mean, as you said, it's the equivalent of having tens of millions of people involved in these protests.
It really is remarkable.
Yeah,
it really is.
And totally peaceful.
Yeah, and you know, that's the other thing. I'm glad you said that. Talk about being a model. Totally, completely peaceful, in contrast to some of the incidents that happen, even with a minority of people with Occupy Wall Street and the Occupy phenomenon in the United States, and certainly with manifestations that happen in the in the Arab Spring. This is 100% peaceful call to conscience by the people of Israel to its government. And one can only hope that the response will accordingly be as constructive and forward-looking.
I want to thank Rabbi David Saperstein of the Religious Action Center for a terrific visit. People can go to your website.
They can, www.rac.org, for RAC, for Religious Action Center. And for those who are interested in being part of the legislative and social justice networks, we have 40,000 committed people all across the country who are part of those networks, and we'd love to have some of your wonderful listeners here in Tucson be part of it.
Thanks, David. Take care. When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out on Too Jewish.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 a.m. Our guest will be Gilad Sharon, son of former Israeli Prime Minister and political lightning rod Ariel Sharon, and author of the brand new book, Sharon, The Life of a Leader. And of course, listen to all of our podcasts on iTunes or our TooJewishRadio.com website and friend us on Facebook. Our playout this morning comes from our pre-Chanukah musical preview. It's from Avanim, our house rock band, and it's called Pitachta, from the psalm that's said every day of the festival. Coming up in about 3 weeks now, I have taken off my sackcloth and robed myself in joy. My friends, may you be blessed with a Shavua Tov, a good week and a week, we pray, of peace.